KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century. We are on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted tonight by myself, Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to the practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight, we are going to be continuing on our series on love stories. So we started this series a few weeks back with just the question, if someone asked you to tell a story about love, what would it be? Who would be the main character? Would there be people in the story? Would it be about something that you're in love with? I mean, it's kind of an endless conversation, an endless story that we all can tell. And so tonight we're going to be joined by two people who are going to be sharing their love story. So I invite you to stay tuned for that. And if at any point during the show there's something compelling for you that you'd like to share, please give us a call. This is a call-in show. So the number is 895-1114. Stay tuned. I'm sure it will be quite the story to listen to. Is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. and till 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468.
Oh,
All right, love in the 21st century. Here we are talking about love stories, as we forementioned. So if you were asked to tell a love story, what would you tell? And that has been the question that myself and the other hosts, Adam Mose and Jonah Richmond, have been asking our friends and family and just about anybody we can get to talk to us. If you were asked to tell a love story, what story would you tell? And two wonderful, willing volunteers are here in the studio with their children. Thank you for joining us. And they're going to share with us their very own love story. So Martin and Shenlin, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you for having us here. Yeah, just as you mentioned, we do have kids in studio, so you never know what you're going to get, but that's love, you know, that's love.
Yes.
In the 21st century.
And your children's names and how old they are?
We have a 3-year-old girl named Zava Tanaya Grace.
Yeah.
And an 8-month-old boy named Yaromir Zemye.
Wow, powerful names.
You know, we're not messing around.
Not messing around indeed. Yeah. So thank you all for all of you joining us and being willing participants. Kids too. It's not necessarily always easy to want to have, you know, little ones in the station, but we are so accommodating and so happy that they're here and part of the show. So thank you, Martin and Shenlin, for being here, and you answered the call to tell the love story. So I'm going to let you guys dive right in.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm getting the nod to go ahead and start. Yeah, you know, we're going to go ahead and share our love story as we met, and it's a unique one. I think everybody has a unique love story. Ours is unique in the sense that we met online, but not in the way that people usually meet online. So we met on Facebook, but not directly, again. How it started was, well, on my end of things, how it started was I got a friend request from somebody named Shenlin Arnett. Am I allowed to use your last name, your maiden name? Yeah, is that okay?
Well,
to share
that's
that?
Accurate. Okay, we weren't married then.
Okay. Just want to make sure I'm sharing public information over public airwaves here. So I got this friend request, and it was probably about the 15th friend request from a random person that I had gotten in a matter of 3 weeks. So at this point, I was kind of, I was just rejecting them because there's all kinds of spam ones, like people in bikinis wanting to be my friends that I didn't even know, which isn't a bad thing per se, but just not the type of people I'm looking to meet.
Right.
You know. So I'm getting all these friend requests, and my first thought was like, I don't want this one either. But then Facebook, luckily, the creators at Facebook started putting the mutual friend count along with it, so you could see how many mutual friends you have. And so I decided, I was like, okay, I'll click. Let's see. We have 67 mutual friends. So I'm like, okay, this isn't just somebody random that's a spam account or something. So I look into it a little more, and I notice that she's a teacher. I was like, oh, cool, I'm a teacher. And she's a teacher. Okay, that's a good start. 67 mutual friends. And I started thinking, I was like, well, actually, just a couple weeks ago, I'd been out with a friend, and he was telling me, you know, you should meet this teacher friend of mine. You know, she's really awesome. I bet you guys would hit off real nicely. And I never found out who he was actually talking about. But in my mind, in that situation, I was like, oh, this is probably her. Teacher, 67 mutual friends. Let me see if he's one of the mutual friends. Sure enough, he was one of the mutual friends. I'm like, this must be the girl for sure. I looked at the picture. I'm like, and, you know, and I have to admit, I did look at her profile pictures. Number one, great photography. I love photography myself. So when I saw that, I was like, good, she's got an artistic eye. And then I happened to notice that she was an attractive female, so I was like, okay, she's checking all the boxes for this random person. So I'm gonna give her at least the benefit of the doubt this time. Maybe it's the person my friend was trying to set us up, you know, something. So I ended up messaging her, though, and I was a little terse, I think is the word. I was a little short, because I was like, okay, but still, You didn't send any kind of message with it. You just sent a friend. I don't know who you are. You know, at least give me some information about yourself. So I sent her a message back saying, okay, hey, you know, I noticed that we have a lot of mutual friends. Who are you? Because I've gotten a lot of random friends. You know, I gave her all the rundown, just basically asking, who are you? Magic happened. I went to sleep that night, woke up the next morning. This was a time in my life when Facebook, I was checking it religiously, at least even while I would wake up in the middle of the night, Facebook. that wasn't really happening, but I did wake up just before school, and, you know, I was doing my morning routine. I got a message back from her. Magic. Absolute magic. Now, keep in mind, I'm an English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, grammar, punctuation, just solid writing in general, very important to me in a person as well as a student. Flawless. She wrote back 3 flawless paragraphs, just packed full of details, packed full of expansive information about who she was, why she added me. And in that information was, I had a mutual friend saying that we should meet up. And that he mentioned to me that you're a teacher and thought that we'd hit it off. And he mentioned that you were in the Yule logs and that you also, she mentioned some other things. So I was like, okay, wait a second. I'm not in the Yule logs. I didn't tell her this, but I was reading. I was like, because she said you're a musician, you're in the Yule logs. Man, tongue twister. But what I did, I was a musician at the time. I was in a band, not the Mule Logs, nor was it the Yule Logs. And so I was like, okay, that's strange, but whatever. Maybe she just mixed something up, you know. So I was impressed. That night, I wrote her back. Probably 5 paragraphs right back at her. Boom, flawless. You know, and then we start sharing music.
Mm-hmm.
She starts sharing a song with me. I'm really into this one. And it's just, you know, things are clicking right, left and right. We're just going back and forth. I hit her with that 5 paragraphs. She comes back with 7 paragraphs the next night. Boom, 9 paragraphs right back at you, Shin. And she comes back, you know, like 5 pages just written out of her life story. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've got 10 pages of my life. And we're just like, we've got to meet now, you know. And so at this point, it's clear that things are moving in a good direction. And it was time to meet. And so we decided to meet up. We hit it off. We go to Upper Crust, local bakery. And cafe, and we had a nice little meal together. That was probably, actually, if I can like indulge for a moment aside from the story, because the story kind of wraps up in an interesting way a little bit here. But it was really sweet. It was like a Saturday. I was taking a Saturday credential class at the university. We met up at lunch, and it was just like a picturesque day. You know, this is our first time meeting. And we had a nice little conversation, a little, you know, like we're a little nervous, but nothing too awkward. Like, okay, good. You know, like we're got a good flow. Cause you know, when you talk online for, you know, a couple weeks, you're used to this ability to really think your answers through, give all these, you know, well thought out responses. And now all of a sudden you're having to be like kind of on the spot with somebody and you're like, ooh, it's a little different. But yeah, so we ended up hitting it off, and she walked me back. We strolled back to class, and
on campus,
and it was fall, so the leaves were falling. I mean, it was just magical. It was like, you know, you couldn't have painted a better like day to meet for the first time. But it was slightly warm. She was wearing like this kind of dress sort of thing, flowy, and it was just. It was like, you know, I was basically watching a movie of myself at that point or something.
Mm-hmm.
I floated up the steps back up MODOC or whatever building that is and wandered back to class with like a grin on my face. And then the teacher's like, all right, we're about to start our quiz or something. I was like, oh, brought me back down. But I was like, no, I'm going to keep glowing, you know. So it was fun. real sweet moment. I don't know if there's anything. She's currently, if you don't mind me telling the audience what you're doing. All right. It's just all open, you know. She's currently breastfeeding, so it's going to make it difficult for her to respond, but I just want to give you, and she's also taking care of our 3-year-old daughter at the same time.
Multitasking mama.
Yeah, this is our life at this point.
The 21st mama.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that part before?
No, I think just the beginning, I don't know, I was going to share from my end of things. The beginning was kind of similar to Martin's, with just a mutual friend talking about some teacher that he knew and saying, like, yeah, like, I think you guys, I'm surprised you don't know him, and, you know, you should, like, maybe I'll try and connect you. And then it was, like, a couple weeks went by, and I didn't think about it again. And then, like, for some reason, in the back of my head, I was like, I wonder who it is. And so I looked him up on Facebook and was like, well, everyone's on Facebook. So, you know, like, I tried finding him, and then I, like, looked for...
Can I pause right there? Because that's actually kind of part of the ending. I don't know. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure we're building the suspense here. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Anyway, so I looked for
Yeah, then I found him on
Facebook, like, through the same way he said, through mutual friends. And I'm like, oh, okay, like, everything, like, you know, all those little, like, details that he shared, I'm like, it's got to be him. Yeah. Even though I had no, like, real idea who I was looking for.
Right.
And then when we started talking, I'm like, oh, this must be who he was, you know, who he had talked about.
Can I just ask on a side note what it felt like to be looking for him on Facebook? And I only ask that because of, like, my own life experience as well as other friends' life's experience of looking for people on Facebook that you don't actually, like, know. And so what the feeling is like to be, like, looking like, I'm about to send this request. And as he was explaining, like, his little system of checks and balances that he went through before he even approved it. So, yeah, what it was feeling like of, were you thinking of any of those things before you were sending it, or you were just like, I'm just going to do this and see how it goes?
Well, I think because of who the friend was, I wasn't sure what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. But I think in the back of my head, and at that time in my life, I was like, well, I'm really hoping that this is, like, some single attractive guy. And then when that happened to look true, I was like, well, this is pretty sweet. Like,
yeah.
I think, and then the other part of the friend request piece of it was, I think it was, like, really late at night when I sent it, and I totally forgot to even, like, say who I was, because I think I had had Facebook long enough that I was, like, familiar with the fact that if you don't know someone, you should, like, say something, like, oh, you know, like, explain the whole backstory, but I didn't. So then when he sent me this really nice message after me not even saying who I was, it was like, oh, that's really sweet of him, rather than, like, you know, just, like, dismissing me or being like, who, whatever, I don't know you.
It makes me think of my own experience of adding people that maybe I didn't know so well, but I don't think I ever wrote anything to anybody. It was ever. So that's a good point. Maybe that's maybe why they never didn't add me as a friend. And also that then it also makes me think of, like, a new feature, which is totally a side note, on Facebook, that sometimes when people send messages, they don't actually get to the person. So you could have copped out and said that. Yeah. You could have been like, I sent it.
Yeah.
No.
What's interesting is I don't think they had that when we met. Right. I think that's, like, a newer
feature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just think what might have happened if they had it.
Right.
And, like, it'd still be sitting in his other file or whatever it is. But, yeah.
Quite possibly
and
so.
There wouldn't be baby sounds in the monitor right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're excited. He's excited. Yeah. Wants his dad.
Yeah. So I guess to pick up there then, so that was a nice little sweet indulgence on that story, that side story.
Mm-hmm.
So we picked up, we've been at this point dating for a while. She sent me that message, just to recap real quick, she sent me a friend request, we sent messages back and forth, we met, we started dating, then about a month in, when it was clear that, you know, things were rolling along, it just occurred to me. I was like, wait a second. I know what happened because I happened to see this guy who, in a second, I'll reveal who it was. Mm-hmm. And if he's listening right now, please call in. So I realized what happened. I asked her, I was like, wait a second. I've been wondering something for a while. In that first message, you told me that I was part of the Yule Logs, but I'm not in the Yule Logs. She's like, wait, you're not in the Yule Logs? I was like, no, I'm not in the Yule Logs. But you're saying that your friend told you that I played in? Yeah, that's the one. I'm like, I know, because I realized that mutual friend that hooked us up, didn't hook us up, actually, that we had in common that I thought was hooking us up.
Mm-hmm.
He's also friends with the guy in the Yule Logs.
Oh.
And was talking to her about Marty. I'm Martin. Mm. Marty Parker, who's in the Yule Logs. And I was like, wait. Yeah. And he is at the time, I believe he was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
My teacher friend. You've got to meet my teacher friend. He's a musician, part of the Yule Logs. I'm a teacher, not part of the Yule Logs, but I'm a musician. So she said, she's like, yeah, wait a second. Well, when I searched for you, I typed in Marty and nothing came up. So I typed in Martin because that was logically the next thing to type in.
Right.
And yours came up.
Mm-hmm.
So I added you. I'm like, but you added the wrong Marty. You were supposed to meet Marty Parker.
Oh.
I'm Martin Sveck. I have never gone by Marty. And so I was like, wow, you met the wrong Marty, but the right Martin.
That is sweet. Yeah. That would be great if he was listening right now.
Yeah, Marty Parker, please call in. Yeah. Friends of Marty Parker, reach out. Get him to call. He's like a big piece of our meeting, and we've never been able to talk to him.
Oh, yeah, that was going to be my next question. Yeah. Was there ever a conversation with him? Never?
We spotted him out in the public once. I was like, Shane, that's Marty Parker. That's him right over there. He's the reason why we're together now.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's Yule Log season coming up. Yeah. You got to say. So there'll be lots of opportunities.
Right.
You know, just going to make a little love reunion there.
Like a little anniversary date night.
Yeah. You brought us. You brought us together. Thank you. You had no idea that you played such a pivotal role in our relationship, but you did.
Right.
We actually made jokes about having him be like the guest of honor at our wedding.
Oh, yes.
And be like, he would be like, who are you?
Right. Yeah. And the friend. So the friend who suggested it to you, do they actually know her?
So
they do know each other, right?
Yeah, so the mutual friend that was talking to me about some teacher, which I never verified with him whether it was her that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
However, I can assume that maybe it was.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we are. So all of us were actually mutual friends, except for Mari Parker. He's kind of the lone wolf out there, friends with this guy that indirectly set us up, but. So it's kind of like this interesting like web how Facebook came together,
right? Conspired in your favor, as they say in the Hunger Games, conspired in your favor. But the friend that you talked to that said that there was somebody they wanted you to meet wasn't the same person. It was a different person that told you that.
Mm-hmm. It was the same person.
It was the same person.
Whoa!
Apparently.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
And I don't think we knew that until it was like all revealed. Or maybe I had mentioned it before and you're like, oh, well, I know who it is.
Well, it would be strange because so in this scenario, he mentioned to her that she should meet Marty Parker. And if I'm assuming right, I assume that he was saying I should meet Shinlin. Mm. So he's like creating this like Shakespearean triangle of love where Shinlin needs to meet Marty Parker, but I'm trying to meet Shinlin, and so I'm chasing after her while she's chasing after Marty Parker. Facebook just cut out the whole Shakespearean triangle of love and just went straight direct to the point.
Right. And now you've been together for how long?
For almost 5 years.
Wow. Good job, Facebook.
Yeah, right?
I wonder how many relationships they brought together.
Oh, yeah. And
probably a lot.
Yeah.
I would guess.
I would imagine that, I don't know. I was going to go in a darker rabbit hole, but maybe we'll just keep it positive love vibes right now. We're feeling the love vibes.
Oh, the curious mind always wants to know.
Yeah. But I would say that one thing that I'm appreciative of is, yeah, it was interesting because, you know, we go through that, like, push and pull with, well, should I even keep faith? Like, at least for me, I've noticed that my generation struggles with Facebook a lot. Should I keep my account? I feel like it's taking over my life. I need to get rid of it. No, I need it back. I need to see my friends more often, but I need to connect with them. Like, we have this weird relationship with Facebook and social media in general. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I've observed.
Right.
And so it's interesting to me where how in this particular scenario at the time I was also grappling with that. I was like, I mean, kind of, what's the deal with social media? Should I even just get rid of it, you know?
Right.
And so it's just kind of funny where, like, we put, like, ourselves in this spin cycle of, like, questions and suffering and undue suffering where it's just like we're thinking about stuff that we don't even think about, and then all of a sudden, bam, something shows up, you know, and almost, right. You know, had I just been operating like I had been operating, just, you know, saying deny to these friendship requests, and if I would have just said, screw all this Facebook stuff and, you know, social media, mm-hmm. you know, here's an opportunity that just totally transformed my life that I would have missed, and, you know, sure, something else hopefully would have come along for my own sake and benefit, but that here we are, like, struggling with these things, and right there, like, things just drop right in front of us and come to us without any right. kind of effort, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I think there's always a balance that is there to be sought about Facebook or anything that we indulge in mm-hmm. too much. And I think that's usually what the call is for people when they say, oh, I'm using Facebook too much, it's taking over my life, is that it becomes this other entity that's more important than maybe the other things that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so that is, in a sense, a good questioning to have. But mm-hmm. there's also the other balance of, like, what benefit is it bringing to your life? Because totally. Not all things are bad things. And, right. and I think you did a really thorough analysis there at the beginning as you were explaining how you went through the decision to add people. Mm-hmm. Because it's, or, you know, how to add your wife. How'd you add your wife? You added your future wife. You know, because sometimes we are indiscriminate about the way we're doing things. And we're just like, it's more friends on Facebook's meet. It's all about the persona, and that's the issue, right? Mm-hmm. Therein lies the issue. It's not about real life. Mm. And so it's like, how do we merge real life, which this story really well does, with the technological world, and not living too much in one where it's, you know, that it's not even real. Like, you could have looked at that picture and been like, that picture looks like really well done. Like, she might be into photography, and that is that really her picture?
Right.
You know, I don't know what your picture looks like, and I'm not meaning anything by that, but that's also a reality that a lot of people live, that they are all about social media and their lives don't really resemble the world that they portray on, you know, in the web. So so it's important to discern those things. And so I'm glad that you brought that part up to let people know, be practical in the way that you use it. But maybe it's not, you know, all the condemning things that we that we make it out to be. And it was shared with me once that technology and the internet is only a reflection of our own consciousness. So if we're really judging what we're using in this, you know, negative way, then what are we really judging? So maybe it's just you just need to be a little more thorough with your friends list.
Yeah.
Like you said, Martin.
It's funny that you say that too, is I kind of have this feeling that technology is our ability to see ourselves even more clearly if we choose to see that, you know, and talking kind of on that deeper spiritual level and awakening level is, yeah, how are we using it and how are we seeing ourselves through that, and are we seeing ourselves in it? I mean, it can get really deep, but yeah, just recognizing that all these things are reflections of us and an opportunity to see what we really are. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we don't like what we're seeing about ourselves, including not putting the real us out there, then what's that telling us about it? I mean, we could just always ask that question, what's this telling me about myself?
Right.
And it's an opportunity, I think, to awaken ourselves and see ourselves a little more clearly, but it also has the ability to hide ourselves more,
right.
You know, simultaneously.
It's all about that awareness to ask that question, because how often are we really asking that question about what we're doing? And it, and I would say just, you know, one more, you know, point for Facebook, we'll give them that, is that I didn't actually meet either two of you. And I do think, Martin, I may have met you before in the past, but I about this conversation that we're having now, before. I we were having all of our conversations through Facebook, and we were connected through friends on Facebook. So, and I do a lot of promotion and connection with people about the radio show in cities that I probably will never meet, in countries that I may never go to, because of Facebook. I mean, and because of mutual friends. They're like, oh, this person, like, connect me here. And I mean, I've met people in Panama, I've met people in Belize that I've stayed with that I met because mutual friends on Facebook. So yeah, so so a few points there for Facebook. I mean, it's practicing that discernment, though.
Yeah, Facebook actually sponsored our wedding, too. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, what?
I feel like we missed the boat on that. We should have been like, okay, Facebook, check out this story. You know, could you just throw us a few thousand dollars for this wedding?
But
I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, when it comes to this stuff. So give that person who's adding you, just give them a fair shot. And if you're adding somebody, please, like, you know, maybe give them, if you can, just a little message that says who you are or something. Because
I never know. It could be your future wife.
Seriously.
Yeah. Or future husband.
Or future husband.
Future partner.
Or,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Or both.
Or both.
I don't.
Well, I don't know.
Squinty eyes.
Love in the 21st century.
Yeah, love in the 21st century, indeed. So so that thorough checklist, you know, discerning, looking through the mutual friends, like, okay, how do these people? How do we know each other? You may not have a story to go back on to say, oh, is that the person that was trying to introduce me to so and so? But just checking to see, like, how are those mutual friends? Are they, you know, are they reaching out for what might seem a valid reason? Do they sort of fit into some of the interests that you have? Are they, do they seem intriguing to you just from, like, looking at their profile? And also, yeah, that message. Or did they send you a message? And nowadays, you want to check that other folder.
Yeah, the other folder,
And which I am guilty of not checking enough of. But yes, because they may be trying to send you a message to let you know that misencountered. It's like the... it's like the 21st century version of misencounters from like Craigslist, you know? I saw you. Like, misconnections, yeah. I saw you in Duffy's and wanted to talk to you. So thank you so much for being willing to come and share your love story on the air. It's been quite entertaining to listen to and hopefully really inspiring of other people to go check their friend requests.
Yeah, see who's out there and maybe start putting out some, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Start just randomly add some. Well, okay, not randomly.
Right.
Very discerningly add some people that you're like, just give this a shot.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and I really appreciated like hearing that Shenlin was the one that initiated that. That's a very 21st century sort of, you know, invitation. That must have been really comforting for you, Martin, that here's this woman reaching out to you to befriend you. Not the typical, you know, 100 years ago encounter. Like, it was definitely mostly on the men's shoulder to do that. Yeah. You're like, obviously she's interested. She wants to be my friend at least.
Right.
So
we're halfway there.
She likes me somewhat. She doesn't know me yet, but hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, family. Okay, she wants a donut. And we'll be with you right soon with Bob and Leslie. We'll be talking about some speakers that are coming here to town. So thank you again so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with some more love stories.
Thank you. Hey, guys. Will Durst here with a few choice words on last Monday's first presidential debate at New York's Hofstra University. 84 million Americans reportedly tuned in, but alas, Donald Trump did not seem to be among them. Post-debate polls show that 54% of respondents thought Hillary Clinton won, 24% thought Donald Trump was the winner, and 22% either had no opinion or looked at the questioner like they were crazy for even asking. Afterwards, Trump went on an oblivion tour to say that everyone told him he had won the debate by huge margins, presumably the same people who tell him he has the best temperament in the history of presidential elections, damn it. It's unbelievable, his temperament. Ask Sean Hannity. Ask Sean Connery. His temperament is better than perfect. His temperament is 98.7 degrees. He has a note from Dr. Oz and Sean Hannity about his incredible temperament. The knock against Hillary is that she was too well-prepared and often looked like an escaped animatron from Disney's Hall of Presidents whose face got frozen while laughing. But that was written off as jealous sniping from the Trump cap solely because the former Secretary of State was able to string words together into actual sentences with subjects and predicates and points. You know, in a presidential sort of manner. After starting strong, Trump wound down like a cheap watch, which has to be especially galling for a guy who claims his opponent is not qualified to be president because of her lack of stamina. Perhaps he thought the debate was being judged on time of possession, which would have explained his rambling and sputtering and eventually muttering something about how the DNC might have been hacked by some 400-pound guy on a couch. He then went on to claim there was a problem with his microphone. And he's right. Unfortunately, it was turned on. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
All right, welcome back to Love in the 21st Century. We were just listening and talking with Martin and Shenlin about their love story and Facebook. Quite a compelling story indeed. And now we are going to segue briefly here to a new topic, a different kind of love story, a love story that involves taking care of our community and taking care of those that are less fortunate in the sense of having a place to call home every night. So thank you so much, Bob and Leslie, for joining me today here in the studio.
Thank you, Tammy.
And we're going to be talking about a solution to homelessness. You all are bringing somebody to town, right?
We are. And Leslie can maybe start out and tell you a little bit about it, and then I'll jump in.
Well, when you start researching homelessness and solutions to homelessness, the first thing you hear about is Utah. Utah is the great success story. So we went online and watched this presentation that the Utah director of the Homeless Task Force had done, and he actually came to Shasta County, did his presentation there. He goes all over and speaks about their model, the Utah model. So we decided to ask him to come to Chico. And yeah, he's coming next week, and we're going to have a lot of meetings with him. We're trying to get him set up with meetings with the housing providers and meetings with the healthcare people and public meetings and private meetings. We're going to make a lot of use of
the city, the county, all the officials that should be concerned about the problem we have in the country as well as in Chico. So we're trying to bring all those forces together under one roof and at different times, actually, different groups to meet and to see if we can't solve some of the problems and figure out ways to move forward to get people. You know, there isn't any one answer. We all know that. There's not any one answer to homelessness. But we do know that housing people that are homeless makes a difference when you reintegrate them into society. The drug use is less, the alcohol use is less, even the mental illness effects are less, and you can work with them. You have an opportunity to actually help them, to bring services to them, move them along. We've seen incredible success just with our own two little houses, plus Leslie and I have a house that we put people into, and we have a lot of people that want to move into those places because they have services, they have support, they have actual family now, actually. As one of the people said to me today, one of our houses, you know, we are family, you know. And that really makes a difference because so many of those people have been disenfranchised from society for many different reasons, and it isn't ours to judge that. It's ours to bring them back into society. And hopefully, with Lloyd Pendleton coming to town and giving us some view on how to accomplish that, we can move forward in Chico and in Butte County to move a lot of people out of homelessness and back into society.
So that would be one of the goals here with bringing Lloyd to town, is to have him inspire some of the city and county officials to be in support of the idea of housing first?
Yep. That's exactly the idea. And we're hoping that they will ask the city and county agencies and officials will like the idea enough that they'll ask for some of the housing providers and agencies to come to them with some proposals, some real specific proposals that they would hopefully then be open to. Because this whole Utah model, it's based on the idea of housing first, as Bob was talking about, where the main problem with homeless people is they need a home. So start there instead of, you know, a lot of towns and cities will provide a lot of services for homeless people, and the only one missing is housing, which is kind of the primary need. We saw that in Sacramento when we visited Loaves and Fishes. They had tons of aid, you know, organizational buildings and projects and programs. The only thing was missing was they didn't have a place for people to sleep indoors. They
right.
had,
and that leads to so many other problems. It leads to people getting sick, people not making meetings. People, once you have them housed, you can bring all those services to them
yeah.
or make sure they get to those services to get the help they need, whatever that help need may be. If it's SSI, if it's general assistance, whether it's help with mental illness, whether it's help, drug and alcohol problems, we can bring help to them or get them to help because we know they're stable, we know where they are, they're safe, they're secure. It makes a dramatic difference in the success of bringing someone back into society.
In our group chat, we mm-hmm. have almost no money, and we're all volunteers, and we've managed to rent two houses, two big houses, and then sublet the rooms to formerly homeless people. We can't call them homeless people anymore because now they're homed people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the agencies that have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, they should be able to do something along this line because the houses that we're doing, the chat houses, we call them chat one and chat two, they, you know, the people are covering most of the cost themselves. They do tend, most of them have some sort of income, even if it's, you know, it's SSI, general assistance, or income from picking up cans and doing odd jobs. So all they really need to do is be able to pay the $400 a month and rent a room. So we just make that all possible by renting a house and then subletting the rooms. And they have to cover the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pick.
And we do help if it's necessary. But we yeah. have doing, as Leslie said, all of those things from picking up cans to general assistance to SSI. And we have people that we're helping to get on SSI mm-hmm. that really need it for a lot of different reasons. So you can do that once people are housed. And mm-hmm. we're hoping that, you know, again, what Chad is doing, obviously we also have our winter shelter program, which is bringing people in from the winter shelter them to have, get them food, a place to sleep at night. But it isn't really what we want. We want to see changes in the city and the county and their variances and the codes to allow us, like we see it has happened now in Yuba City.
Mm-hmm.
They have housing.
Right.
They have housing in Yuba City.
Mm-hmm.
Chico does not. They have housing in Yuba City. That, and I've gone there with Bill and we've interviewed the people there, and it's amazing what they're doing and the success they have, and talking to the people there, how thrilled they are to be inside
mm-hmm.
and not outside for the winter and having a place mm-hmm. to stay and being able to transition. And we should be able to do that in Chico. And I think, you know, Les and I made a movie going north to Eugene and Portland and Seattle and Olympia, and saw the success. Different models, but they're all small homes and community centers. Different models as to how they put them together and how much input the clients or the formerly homeless had. But it's successful. We see 200 units in Texas and Dallas. We see them in Madison, Wisconsin. They're going up all over. And I think it's time for Chico to get on board. I really do. And I think we need the city council and the county supervisors to allow us to put some of these models in place. And I think that we're hoping that Lloyd can help that
mm-hmm.
through his speech. And as Leslie was saying, the follow-up meetings with city officials, county officials, the stakeholders that are in this community. And there's many of them. There's many, many of them. And bringing them all together might start us a new conversation that we're hoping for to become solution-based.
Right. And so you did mention that there are a couple houses that you're currently sort of micro version of doing this now. And can you maybe talk a little bit about the successes and challenges you may have had with this?
Well, there's always challenges, but it's been incredibly successful. One we've had now for 13 months, and it's been amazing. They have become family. We had actually just our first person move out and move to Seattle, which is a success. They moved, they made a movement, so we're going to put another person into that house, and that selection will be by us and also the group of people living there, selecting someone from the homeless community that will fit into that environment that they've created for themselves. The other house has been going for over 4 months now, and it's very successful. The people there are like family. You go there and you realize that they work together. They figured out how to pay bills. They're now developing credit histories, things that they've lost for many different reasons, whether it's drug, alcohol, abuse in the home, whatever it happened to be that led them to homelessness. They're now redeveloping all the things they need to be viable citizens, where they can rent their own place, where they can buy their own home, where they can get a job. We have two people I was talked to today that I wanted to be on the be interviewed this morning at 11:30, and I just found out they both got jobs. They're both working. Mm-hmm. And that's just awesome. That's what we want to see. We want people to reintegrate into society, become independent people with that can get housing, get rentals, get a vehicle or whatever they need to get around. And they both, these two people, both have not, you know, in a year now, 13 months or 12, 13 months, have not started back on drugs. So it's really important for us to be able to keep this Housing First model going. And again, Lloyd Pendleton may help us do that because he can show the success on a large scale in Idaho and Utah. So,
and they really, in Utah, they really focused on the most difficult sector of the homeless community. They decided they would start with the chronically homeless, and that's the people that really have maybe been resistant to services for whatever reason, that have mental illness, that have been out at least a year, or have been out like four times homeless within the course of 3 years. Mm-hmm. That's some kind of definition of that category. And that's where they had their great success. So that is really challenging because there are other homeless people who maybe lost their home to foreclosure or, you know, medical bills caused them to go through bankruptcy and go broke or whatever.
Or divorce. Or there's so many reasons. And the thing is, we don't want to judge the reasons. We want to just bring them into a home and help them, you know, again, reintegrate into society. And I don't think any of us in chat want to judge why someone is homeless. We want to be able to help them be not homeless.
So, the Chico Housing Action Team, how much involvement do they have in the house? So I heard you, Bob, say that the residents have come together to figure out how to pay bills and sort of make a flow happen in the home. But I'm just curious, like, how much real involvement does CHAT have from the beginning, from when the house starts to, like, now? Like, what is it?
We have involvement on a regular basis. We've developed a relationship. We have become part of the family where if something is happening, there's a problem, we get called upon. We had someone in the hospital. We spent the whole day with someone in the hospital. So they know that they can rely on us as family to help them when there's a problem. We have meetings in the homes. We help them to figure out how to schedule the payments and who should be paying what for different things and how to pay the bills and make sure that they're paid and to be responsible to each other. And if someone makes a loan to somebody else, how to make sure that that gets paid back. So we're working with them on a regular daily basis, you might say, to make sure that they're successful. And they're aware of it. I mean, the people are aware of it. They know that we care. And they're willing to call us. When there's a problem, one of us will get a call, and we'll go and respond to it and work with them and sit and work it out. And just as you would with a family. You know, your families aren't perfect. They have problems. And there's always things that occur that some person is out of sorts, or they're sick, or whatever it happens to be. And we are there for them, and now they're becoming there for each other. It's really a beautiful thing to see, actually.
Such a great reference, too, to compare it to being family, because it's really all those things that you said. You know, you get along with your family sometimes, you don't get along with your family sometimes, but they're always there.
And you're always family.
They're always family, and good times and bad times, you share those times together, and you call on them when you need them. And, how much is a parent or a sibling there for you when you fall down and you need some financial support or you need some moral support? Or you need just somebody to sit there and listen to you, you know, figure it out yourself. Like, we underestimate and take for granted how much our family really does that for us. And when somebody's living on the streets, there's a kind of like a makeshift community that forms. And there is that sort of family bond with many people that are living on the streets. But it's also a very much survival mode that it can't really get beyond this, like, what are we doing in order to just stay alive? So it's beautiful to hear that it's really, coming together. Right. And that CHAT's a part of that family.
Yeah, and we have a lot of requests to find other master leases by people who want to move in. And so, we're continuing to look. But it is, so many times, unfortunately, it's about money. And it's also about people who are willing to give us a chance.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things we'd like to ask for as we're speaking to our community right now is if you have a house that you rent out, get in touch with us if it happens to become vacant and you would be willing to try working with CHAT, because we would be the responsible tenant. So we're both a tenant and a landlord. So we rent the house from the owner, and then we're the backup, the fallback. If they don't pay the bills or they move out or something happens to the house, we would be responsible. And we manage to make sure the bills all get paid if the tenants don't come up with the money. So,
and we even have classes as to, again, how to pay bills, how to make sure that everything is covered. So we actually work with the people. And, you know, a lot of the people in this community who have rentals rent them to college students, and they trash them every semester. They get trashed. Give them to us. We're keeping these houses clean, neat. The yards are, you know, being cut. The grass is being cut. We even do plantings. So we take care of the places.
And a lot of our tenants have been homeowners in the past. They know how to take care of a house. So one of the things we need is houses. We're also looking for a large building, like it could be an office type building or a warehouse, something like that, that we can use for winter shelter, because it's really challenging, but we're trying to do two completely different things simultaneously. You know, one is providing housing, so that's a home, obviously. That's where you live, mm-hmm. keep all your stuff. And then the winter shelter, that's just overnight. You bring all your stuff, you have a place to kind of throw down a, you know, a mat and sleep for the night, and then you have to leave in the morning. So the winter shelter is not a home, but it's a place that people can spend the night to keep from freezing to death. And we would like to have a facility for that. We've been rotating from church to church with our winter shelter mm-hmm. that goes for 3 months through the winter. And it would save us an incredible amount of volunteer energy and time and money if we could find a place to rent at a low cost that would be like 2,000 square feet, and we could make that into our safe space for the 3 months of the winter period. Right. That would be great.
That would be awesome, because then at this point we have to transport every day back and forth. We have to do an intake at a different spot and then transport. We have to take everybody's gear every day. We have to do laundry 3-4 times a week. We have to move everything once a week from mm-hmm. one place to another, all the stuff, and then we end up having to do all the bedding and everything. It would save a tremendous amount of energy, time, money, and people hours if we had a specific place that was big enough for us to have a winter shelter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to touch on the fact that there's a big difference between that transient living, that basically what the shelter is continuing, and a permanent living facility.
Absolutely.
For people, it's very different to be, you know, have a home to have your own and put your things in, and to be in a place just for a night. And so I know a lot of people say like, oh well, we have the shelters here, and that, but that's not a long-term plan, that doesn't really help people plan for the future, when really they have to still plan for where they're going to sleep the next night. So I think it's so important to consider that like you said, Leslie, those are two different things, but they're so, like, they're steps in the path. They're,
right.
One leads to the next. It's not that one is, you know, going to answer one for the other.
And we actually did the three programs. There's the Master Lease, Master Lease, Winter Shelter, and then housing that mm-hmm. we're working on. And they all take a different type of energy to get, you know, to be accomplished. And another thing that we do with our winter shelter is we allow animals, mm-hmm. which is really important, because animals are like family to an awful lot of homeless people. We are wet. I mean, we don't turn people away because they're on drugs or alcohol, as long as they can maintain for the evening. So it's really important for us to know that we're taking people in that really can't fit anywhere else in this community,
mm-hmm.
Except under bridges or along, you know, waterways or whatever.
All volunteers. We have no paid staff. And when we started, some of the housing agencies told us, and others, you know, you didn't know what we were doing. This is dangerous. You don't know what you're getting into. You're not professionals. But really, the fact that people know that you care goes a long way.
Long way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a real thing.
It is. People would say, we feel loved here. We know you guys are here because you care.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very good.
Absolutely.
And we just want to make sure we reiterate the...
Yes, please.
There are two main events with Lloyd Pendleton, one in Chico, one in Oroville. So he'll be speaking at Bidwell Presbyterian Church, which is the one right there on First Street by Chico State, kind of right behind Laxon. He'll be there on Monday, World Homeless Day, which is kind of what inspired us to do this whole project of bringing him to Chico. We wanted to do something really special for World Homeless Day. So that's 1 to 3 p.m. on Monday, August 10th.
So October 10th.
October 10th. Yeah, mm-hmm. August. So October 10th. And then the following day, he will be in Oroville speaking at the Southside Oroville Community Center at 5 o'clock. So we're hoping people can come over there after work if they didn't get a chance to see him at the other program.
And that's open and free to anyone.
Yeah, they're both open and to the public and free. So we want to get, I think our vision of it is we get the whole community on board with understanding the concept of housing first and believing in it and wanting to make it work. And then from there, we can work out the details of how we're going to do it. Because, of course, it costs money, but ultimately what they showed in Utah and many other places is the community as a whole saves a lot of money by going with housing first. It might cost $8,000 a year to house somebody, but $20,000 a year to have them living on the street and constantly be going to, you know, taking to the ER and the jail and this and that. So,
actually more than 20,
and maybe
yeah.
even getting, you know, into crime and hit by cars and
or yeah,
also,
in jail or in the court system or yeah. in the hospital, which we ended up, you know, many times taking people to the hospital.
And there's a whole environmental aspect to this, too, right. because when people are living along the creeks and in the parks, there's a lot of trash that's left behind and a lot of messes.
Yes, the list surely goes on, and there's such great reason for why housing should be first. I mean, it's pretty simple. I think Maslow's hierarchy was saying that, you know, one of those fundamental things that we need before we can get anywhere else is shelter. So, and not just one that's temporary. So, thank you so much for being willing to come on and let people know. A Solution to Homelessness, October 10th, 1 to 3 p.m., Bidwell Presbyterian Church. And if you forget all that, you can look up Chico Housing Action Team online. I'm sure that it will get you to the event information. So that's coming up very soon.
Remember, it's free.
Yes, it is definitely free. Thank you again so much for joining us, Bob and Leslie.
Thanks, Tammy.
Yeah. Thanks. And you want to mention that?
Yes, I will mention the Chico Peace and Justice Center is having their annual dinner this Wednesday. It's a Frayed Nation is the speaker, Sue Hildebrand, who is on KZFR, hosts the Wednesday evening program, The Point Is. And it's a beautiful fundraiser for a wonderful organization that's been open for almost 30 years now and has been educating the community on peace and justice. I might just want to add that it's one of the oldest peace and justice centers in the nation. So it's 1982 is when it began. So come out and support them. It is Wednesday, October 5th at the Chico Masonic Family Center. You can still get tickets tonight for a discounted price at Pull and Cycle, I think, before they close. You better run down there. Otherwise, they are tickets at the door, but you can still get tickets at the door. So thank you so much. We'll be back with you next Tuesday. Ecotopia is coming up next, so stay tuned for those wonderful folks, Steve and Susan Judy.
Listen, children, you came from the stars and you're more magical than you ever knew you are. Let your love guide you, let your light shine true. Don't let it mine, you've got diamonds inside your soul. Don't be afraid of who you are. Kings and queens who came from the stars. Who needs proof when you know what truth is? The truth just is, it needs no mirror to exist. And since we're living in the shadow of the dark, find the light path back to the heart of the matter. Somebody's pockets is getting